Hello and welcome back to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity and mental health. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have one of the episodes of the mini-series into ending domestic violence. This episode is themed what women should consider before leaving a domestic violence relationship. I have brought on a special guest for today, which is Laurie Arrowsmith from White Ribbon Australia. Welcome to you, Laurie.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So Laurie is a Senior Workplace Program Specialist at White Ribbon Australia, responsible for managing the Workplace Accreditation Program, where she partners with workplaces to provide internal audits of policies, procedures and culture in relation to women's safety and gender equality. Laurie has worked with family and domestic violence in the sector for over 10 years, working directly with perpetrators through the facilitation of men's behavioural change programs, as well as victim survivors via counselling case management services. She's also developed and delivered various programs in aid of reducing violence against women and children, including a bespoke fathering program for men who use violence and a support and healing program for women and children who have escaped violence. Wow, that is a bio, Laurie. So straight in, because I personally am very excited. So when women are going to be leaving a domestic violent relationship or they are considering to leave, what are some of the key steps that they should be taking to ensure safety before leaving?
Yeah, so you're definitely right. Statistically speaking, we know the most dangerous time for women is when they do leave a relationship or when they're planning to leave a relationship. Often this is when the violence escalates or we see instances of lethality. However, many women actually struggle to leave as they are often financially dependent on the abuser. And the reason this is because they have had control over the finances and have not allowed much of that control to be given to the woman. So they've made it impossible for her to have access to any resources financially. And this is particularly difficult if there's children involved as well. So firstly, that's the biggest thing. Having access to financial resources is going to be the critical first step for her. So how they might work through this is saving a bit of money each week in a separate account that can't be tracked, that can be helpful. There's also something called the Escaping Violence Payment, which is about $5,000 that can be accessed for women experiencing family violence. And that's usually via organisations like Uniting, Wesley Mission. In addition, there's also lots of government payments that people aren't always aware of for single parents, you know, parenting payments, single income family supplements, family tax benefits, AMB. Another important thing to consider is to have cash on hand rather than trying to have electronic payments, which are easier to track as well. Secondly, there may be many family and domestic violence support services out there that can work with women experiencing violence and abuse, depending on which state she's from. And we can tag a lot of those, I'm assuming, in your show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I can provide you with lots of those. So these organizations can provide referrals for like emergency accommodation, for instance, counseling, case management, any sort of support she might need. But they also might help her apply for intervention orders to protect her and the children from any abuse that's happening. So yeah, if safe to do so, I would say start gathering evidence. That can be really helpful if you want to press charges in the future. Try to keep a record of what's happening, especially, you know, even photos of any physical abuse as well. Lastly, making like an escape plan can be really, really helpful. Preparing in advance, you know, how you might leave quickly if something becomes unsafe. I always recommend, though, remembering that you can call 000 if there's an emergency happening as well.
And in regards to that plan, is that the safety plan or is that something separately?
So it can form part of a safety plan. So a safety plan effectively is a plan that you can do with like a support service, a family and domestic violence support service that can help you to work out a way to keep yourself and your children safe, whether you're deciding to leave the relationship or not. So if it is to leave the relationship, then that will form part of an escape plan, yes. So what you could do with that is go through it in detail with a family or domestic violence professional. If children are involved, you might want to think about them having either a separate plan or that plan forms part of your plan as well. Things like having a go bag ready with the original documents that are really important, any medications, money, spare keys, those sorts of things. But I think one of the most important things to remember is to protect your privacy online. Some perpetrators, and quite a few of them these days, actually it's increasing all the time, are actually using technology and the internet to continue to stalk and harass, even after somebody has left the relationship as well. So we know phones are easily tracked, for instance. We know computers can be monitored. So even though, you know, you can clear history, it's actually better to use like a computer at a local library, for instance, or a trusted friends and family's computer. If you're not sure if your phone has tracking services on it, I would just either get a new phone if you can, or use public pay phones because they're free to use. They've got free Wi-Fi, a lot of them, and obviously can't be tracked. Another really great tip is that some domestic and family support services can do a tech sweep on anything that you've got to ensure there's no tracking devices on them so that you cannot be tracked. So that's a really, you know, important thing that I think a lot of people don't realize can be done.
Yeah, I had a friend who, she left a relationship which was definitely abusive, and he actually had an old iPad of one of their kids and he'd linked it to her messages. She had no idea he had this iPad, and it was eventually found, and that's how he knew what was going on, because he had synced in through the cloud on this old child's iPad. And that was really shocking to her, that he had seen everything that had been going on for months.
Yeah. And it's very common. It happens a lot of the time. Yeah. So, and in ways that you wouldn't even think could happen. Like, yeah, as you say, a children's old device, for instance, that you wouldn't even think that they would be thinking of or having access to. So it is, that tech sweep can be really helpful, even just for peace of mind to know that you're not being tracked.
So support networks, what kind of role does support play? Because we know that there is an isolation part of this type of abuse as well. Yeah. How does that work?
Yeah, so we know that women in abusive relationships, they've endured this abuse generally for years and usually under some form of coercive control from the perpetrator. And that's warmed them down emotionally. It strips them of their confidence often. And so when they realize the relationship's not healthy, you know, they don't really know how to prove these sort of forms of abuse. So many men don't use physical abuse, for instance. Only a small proportion of them do. So they can't always articulate what the forms of abuse are or be able to prove it to others. So by reaching out to professional domestic and family violence supports, these experts can actually help break down the abuse and explain what's really happening. I think because of that bit of brainwashing sometimes from the perpetrator, women tend to think that the abuse either isn't as bad as they think it is, or perhaps they're kind of making it a big deal when it's not. But this can be really reassuring to sit down with a professional and to actually say, hey, you know what? What you're experiencing is not okay. It's real. And that, you know, we believe them. This can be really empowering. In terms of social networks, of course, these can be really, really helpful. So these could include like trusted friends, family members, work colleagues, even neighbors that you trust. The important thing to remember here, though, is that the key tactic of abusers is to alienate victims from their social networks. So this may continue even after the relationship ends by poisoning friends and families against the victim. So perpetrators usually do this by telling lies about their ex-partner and playing victims themselves. So the important thing to remember here is only to confide in those that you really, really trust. Let them know your plan to leave. That's the plan. Ask them for their support and how they might help you implement the plan. And it could even just be things like providing them a temporary place to live or to have their children housed or something like that. For some people, it's safer not to tell anyone at all, especially if they've been really, really isolated and they haven't got many supports around them. So if they're deciding to leave, they might sort of decide that they're going to do that on their own. Each person knows what's best for them and what's safest for them. And being a family and friend member, if you do find out that they hadn't told you, don't be disappointed or surprised that they didn't disclose that violence. You know, just understand that they know what's best for them kind of moving forward. And then just in regards to support services, so you can do it via text or email. Sometimes they have chat functions. Some actually also offer outreach, which is really handy to know. And you can meet somewhere in a public place, for instance. But for anyone that's concerned about how a phone might display on a phone bill or whatever, you can always ask about the ID as well and what that's going to look like on the bill. So these are just helpful ways to get support without being tracked.
Yeah. What about in regards to legals? What legal protections are available to women who are leaving a relationship, and how can they access them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So if a woman does decide to leave an abusive relationship, she can apply for like a domestic violence intervention order, for instance. They're called different things in different states, AVOs, IVOs, depending on what state you're on. And this order actually helps to protect her and her children from their abuser. So it can be done by contacting local police. I always say preferably ask for the domestic violence liaison officer if you can, if they're applicable and available in your region. They're trained in this area, so they'll be able to help you perhaps better than just, you know, a regular police officer. You can also do it via your local court, or you can contact legal aid or women's services as well to help you through that sort of process. Intervention orders have conditions, so about how a person can behave towards the protected person or persons if you've got your children on there as well, and that they must follow those conditions of the order. If they don't, police can actually take action. So that's why they're quite important to have if you feel that you're unsafe. So the conditions that they can have in place, for instance, is to stop harassment, threatening, intimidating behaviours, being near the protected person's house, so it gives them space, contacting the person in any way, or damaging their property in any way as well. So if any of these conditions are breached, is what we call it, then I would always recommend that they call the police and report it. Police can then investigate the breach, and it's important to report as all of the breaches so that we gain a bit of a record of behaviour about what's going on, so that if we do need to provide evidence in court later on, it's easier to do so with that evidence. Sometimes they can be hard to prove, though, the breaches, unfortunately, which can really lead to victims being frustrated and feeling unsafe. So I do acknowledge that as well. So it's why it's really important to have these safety networks in place and support networks in place. So as I said before, if you do ever feel like you're in serious danger, always call 000 as well.
Okay. Sorry, it's such a heavy topic, isn't it? Sorry.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, sorry. I know that you live and breathe it, Laurie.
Yes,
sometimes it is.
I know.
Okay, so how important is it to seek legal advice before leaving, and what should women know about restraining orders or custody issues before they leave?
Yeah, so I would always recommend seeking legal advice if possible. A really good starting point for women could be a woman's legal service. And we can also put this in the notes as well. They operate across all states. So they focus on the well-being of women with a really strong understanding of family and domestic violence. Unfortunately, a lot of family lawyers don't always know a lot about family and domestic violence, so it sometimes can't be as helpful. So with these organisations, you know, intake officers and solicitors will be able to help sort of navigate the legal system and offer support, because the legal system is quite complicated, as we know. So there's protections and there's often financial aid as well, depending on that person's circumstances. Another option would be to contact a family lawyer. So you might have a local one that you know, but again, try to find out if they understand and are trained in family and domestic violence if possible. If finances are tight or you don't have access to bank accounts, legal aid could be a really good one to tap into. However, they do have very tight restrictions and able to access that. But if you're applicable, very much worth having a look at that. And also another thing to think about is that often family lawyers do offer a free consultation to discuss your options. So that could be a good starting point. The other really important thing here to think about is once you've kind of left the relationship, you don't always have to go down that legal pathway through family court. There's mediators that can help. So they're called family dispute resolution mediators. And in actual fact, they can help with many things. So they can help with co-parenting arrangements, for instance. They can help with financial separation. And they can be offered through Relationships Australia or Uniting. And they're often quite well priced as well, if they're not done privately. So we do know in Australia that it's a requirement that couples at least try mediation before going to family court anyway. So that can be a really good starting point.
I thought that was a really good point. I knew a friend who used a mediator in this sort of situation, and she said that they sat in separate rooms.
Yes.
And the mediator really reasoned with her partner, who was male, who was quite hard to reason with, to put lightly. And she really didn't see the mediator much. She sat there for a lot of the day whilst the mediator really spoke with her ex-partner, and they eventually came to an agreement by the end of the day, which was pretty amazing, I thought.
So much better if you can come to an agreement that way. If you think about the costs of going through family court and how much stress and pressure that puts on everybody, including the kids, Yeah. And I hear a lot of cases where it happens successfully. What you described there is called a shuttle mediation, where they're actually in separate rooms. So if there's an intervention order or there's concerns about safety, then we would always recommend shuttle mediation. Yeah.
She said she was really relieved when she arrived that they were separated. She thought that they would be across the room, you know, and at the end of the day, they made a very strong guarantee. I think it was $3,000 for the whole day, that they would have a signature on paper by the end of the day. And they did do that, which she thought was pretty good deal financially.
100%. If you think about lawyer's fees, that's nothing. $3,000 to get through that. Yeah.
Yeah. Great outcome. Ordered before Christmas, which I thought was great. But anyway, sorry, that was off topic. But I agree. I think mediation can be really helpful. So in regards to, I suppose, to practicalities, so what options are available for women who like immediately need to have a house, shelter, you know, after leaving?
Yeah, so shelters and refuges, they're in high demand. We desperately need funding across those services. So you can reach out and see what their wait lists are like or if they can get you in quickly. What I would do is call 1-800-RESPECT as the first option. That's a Australia-wide national sort of support service for domestic and sexual assault. So, you know, as I said, sadly, those refuges are in high demand, so it can be difficult to get into them. However, also there are other avenues. For instance, some of the services could help with putting people into hotels for a short stay, for instance. And there's also organisations that help with housing pets for a short time too, if that's a consideration. I know a lot of people don't want to be parted with their beautiful pets. And so having that option is important too for those people. Another thing that could be considered is to have that partner actually legally removed from the home. So instead of actually having to seek shelter herself, to actually get the partner legally removed. So that's through seeking a sole occupancy order, but it's based on the grounds of family and domestic violence and safety. So if she feels she's not safe, then she has a good case. But again, speaking to a legal representative and contacting support services for that. If you're considering changing the locks on the house, for instance, legal ownership is key here. So joint owners need to tread a bit carefully. In cases of property disputes, a court order might be necessary, but consulting with a legal expert is pivotal to explore these avenues fully, just so you ensure you proceed correctly. Yeah.
I was kind of like thinking, would you just change the locks and seek forgiveness?
Yeah.
I feel like, and I know you can't say, but I'm just saying, I was like just thinking about it, I was like, if I had a friend, I'd probably say beg for forgiveness rather than ask permission to change the locks.
Yeah. And actually there are support services out there that can help with the payment and actually changing the locks for you and putting up cameras as well around the house, at the outside of the house, especially if there's been an intervention order put into place, for instance, just to keep that extra level of safety in mind.
So how can a woman find local resources such as shelter, legal aid, counselling services if she's afraid that the perpetrator may find out it's trackable on a phone? Like, how would you go around that?
Yeah, so my very first step would always be to call 1-800-RESPECT. As I said, they've got services that you can get across any state. They will be able to refer onto services and help create a safety plan. They also have something called DAISY, which is a free app that they've developed. So you can actually access local support services and search the internet without it actually showing up. So it protects user privacy. So that's a really good tip as well. If there are concerns around the abuser tracking their devices, for instance, not using those devices at all, using free pay phones, asking friends to use those to contact those services.
Yeah, because you've got that planning phase. Mm-hmm. But if in that planning phase you're not using your own phone, it would be a lot trickier and it'll take more time.
That's right. And I do know some services can offer free phones as well. So if you go to a family and domestic violence service, some of those can offer free phones that they can use so that they're not using their usual phone, for instance.
Yeah, got it. And final question, Laurie. So what are some of the key resources or helplines that women should be aware of both nationally and locally when they are preparing to leave? So I suppose if you're in that planning phase and you do have limited time on a friend's phone or in a library, where would be some places you'd start?
Definitely, again, with 1-800-RESPECT. They've also got a service directory online which lists a huge amount of local and national support organisations on all sorts of range of topics. So if you go onto their website and go /services, that will show you everything there that you need to know. You can also call them for free 24/7 support as well. They're always there and they've got counselling people to talk you through anything that's going on for you or next steps that could be helpful for you.
Okay, so if you listen to this conversation, for example, and you thought, oh, maybe I would like to talk to someone about whether this is DV or not.
Yes.
One of those people would be able to have one of those discussions around this is how it's happening or not happening to create that, I suppose, confirmation or validation.
Yes, 100%. I think that's really important because, as I said before, a lot of victim survivors, they know it's an unhealthy relationship, but they're not really sure how to articulate it or if they're kind of making it bigger than it is. So just to make it really clear, ring those services and tell them what's happening and they can just really articulate for you what they are hearing and what they see and whether that's abuse or not.
Okay, great. That was everything that I had written down as questions. Is there anything that you wanted to add?
I guess one of the only things that I was thinking in terms of neurodiversity is abusers will tend to try and drag you back into the relationship. So that will be one of the key things that they do when you try to leave. They will sort of love bomb. There'll be certain tactics that they try to do to get you back into that relationship. And I guess, you know, it can be hard sometimes to understand, but you sort of step away and think, oh, maybe they're doing that because they love me and they want me back. But we know it's a form of manipulation. And just understanding that and not being afraid to speak to somebody about that, saying, oh, look, he's doing this. He's coming back to me. You know, what should I do? Maybe I should go back. Some people do go back and that's okay as well. We're not saying that that's not something to do, but I think to reach out and to actually talk to people about those options and what that looks like, yeah, is quite important, I think.
I agree. Look, thank you so much for your time, Laurie. Really appreciate it. And we will catch.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.